you want your aim and objective to be through the study of Raj Yoga. What Baba has said to us, your aim and objective, and he's given us a symbol of Vishnu. And what he has said is that your aim and objective is to become divine. Now when he uses this word, Madhyajibhava, he's not actually saying, become Vishnu. Here is a symbol, and I want you to become this. But what he's doing, this word bhava means, you are that. You are divine. And I will give you teachings, and I will help facilitate the path for you to return to something that you are. So the word bhava means it will happen. It will happen. But the teachings would be required and the facilitation of the path to return to that is also going to happen. But it's very interesting, when we come and we see the symbol of Vishnu, then, you know, we could either be turned off of this symbol of Vishnu, or we could even be turned off of being divine, even though we have sayings in the world like, to err is human, to forgive is divine. Now we have narrowed down forgiveness as being human and not divine, because we're not interested in divinity. We want to be good human beings. But what Baba is saying is that you need to go back, that forgiveness is not a human trait, but it is a divine trait in the human being. So what he wants to take us back to is to move from being human, or to move from the awareness of just being human to an awareness of being divine human beings. And to look at these qualities that are necessary in life through the eye of divinity and not through the eye of being human. Requires from me at this moment in time, and I look at those qualities through the eye of a human being, that I will be very divisive. That I will struggle. Because as a human being, I have inculcated within me so many sanskaras that are called acquired sanskaras that are becoming the lens for me to look at what's going on in the world, and so my responses are coming from those sanskaras that are divisive. Because I inculcated them as a human being from the Copper Age. But when I look through the lens of the sanskaras that are divine within me, then I see a totally different picture. And so when I come to Baba, even though he has shown this image of Vishnu, Madhyajibhav, your aim and objective to become divine, it is as if we are confronted with two walls. You know, we walk in and he says, here is the picture of Vishnu in the middle and here are two walls. And I want you to engage in this activity of returning to your divine self. Every day, I'll give you teachings to help you with that, the Murli. And I want you to use these teachings, the Murlis, to help you return to your divinity. And then, within the two walls, he says, choose how you want to do it. So it's two blank, like two blank walls. Say, let's say, what, not even a canvas, but a wall. And what some of us do, we want to become this. Because this aim and objective is not a set of theoretical knowledge of how to. But this aim and objective is about returning to my true self. We call it my authentic self. We call it my real self. We call it my true self. Or we call it my divine self. And so some of us, what we've done is that we take the knowledge, the teachings that Baba's given us, and we begin to paint a picture of our divinity on the wall. And so in painting that picture on the wall, what happens to us is that after a few years, we may begin to question the painting of ourselves that we have done on the wall and said, well, is that my true self? Because in painting it, I kind of have the attitude of, let me fake it till I make it. Let me pretend that I am a deity until I actually truly become that. So there's a saying, let me fake it till I make it. So whatever I'm painting on the wall, if I concentrate on that painting of myself, then one day, hopefully, I will become that. It was as though that painting of the deity image of myself, I will breathe life, or Baba will breathe life into it, and it will become a living reality. And so that's how I try to see into being my aim and objective. But then there's another way, and I think this is a more sustainable way. And that is the other wall, the choice is that I can clean the wall. And so I use the teachings that Baba has given me as detergent to clean the wall. And the more I clean that wall, it's the more my true, authentic, divine, true, and real self reveals itself to me. And I begin to see that. And so, seeing into being for me is not painting an image of yourself with the hope that one day I'll become that. But seeing into being is to clean the self and to let the true self reveal, be revealed to you, the way Baba sees you. Now this would require a little bit more of efforts, right? To clean the self. And to clean the self means that I not just listen to Baba's Murli feeling happy when he describes me with those beautiful words, you know, like you are a deity and you are as you were, you would become, and you are going to be those world rulers, and you are the ones with the Shakti for me, and you going to conquer Maya, and all those beautiful things that he says to us. But I will use the knowledge not just to stimulate an intoxication within me, which is a good thing, but I would also use the knowledge to clean out these acquired sanskaras so that their original sanskaras can show themselves to me. We don't create divine sanskaras. We don't create them from nowhere. Divine sanskaras exist in the soul. In order for them to manifest and to emerge, I need to clean out my acquired sanskaras. And so once I can do that, then I will feel the intoxication, not just coming from the teachings of Baba, but I would feel the intoxication coming from, you know, when he says, claim your inheritance from Baba, I would feel that intoxication coming from my inheritance, which means from these divine sanskaras becoming living within the soul. And then I'm able to sustain those sanskaras. Because Vishnu is a symbol of sustenance. And so if these sanskaras reveal themselves to me, and I identify with those divine sanskaras as something that is really who I am, then my responsibility is to sustain those sanskaras in my life at the confluent stage. It's not that the sanskaras reveal themselves to me, and you know what? They will become permanent in the golden age. But when the sanskaras reveal themselves to me now at the confluence age, it is my responsibility to sustain them and to make them part of my transformation process. So the transformation process is not based on getting rid of your impurities or your illusions, which are Maya, or your weaknesses. But the transformation process is based on how you are able to sustain your divine sanskaras. How is that able to put you on this upward spiral? Now, when we took spiritual birth, Baba said he's given us gifts. Do you remember your gifts that you were given when you took spiritual birth? Or you were not given gifts when you took your spiritual birth? What were your gifts? Martha, what did Baba give you as a gift when you took your spiritual birth? No? She's looking at me smiling. I wonder why you don't want to talk to me. Is my image one that doesn't encourage, doesn't invite responses? Eric is saying yes. Why is that so, Eric? What am I doing that is not soliciting responses? You feel humble. Then you have to look that way. Vishnu is that way. Okay, when you realized you were a soul, that moment in your life, your spiritual birth is when, in that moment, of course it could be different for, I'm just giving one example, it could be different for different people. But in that moment, you say, you know what? I'm not just a body, I'm a soul. And I realize that I am a spiritual being. That's self-realization. Some people may not say, I'm a soul, but some people may have said, oh, you know, in that moment, I am a child of Baba, and maybe not so much as a soul. But then that became obvious after. So how did you, in that moment of spiritual birth, you saw yourself differently? It's like you were seeing your being differently. You were no longer seeing yourself as just a human being, but you were seeing your being, who you are, who am I, differently. So in that moment, Baba gave you some gifts. And actually, what I liked about it from the Murlis and also from my own personal experience of it, is that the two gifts he gave us was a divine intellect and divine insight. So the divine intellect meant that my intellect was now understanding things differently. My intellect was no longer processing knowledge as information. It was no longer processing concepts. And it was no longer working from just this cognitive way. But it was now shifting to looking at things more experientially, more from experience, more from being reflective learners, more from being contemplative learners, more from what Baba says, the intellect is like, it became something that was like an introverted intellect. It was no longer an extroverted intellect, looking at things from the outside and wanting to understand them from a scientific frame or from a material framework. But this intellect, this divine intellect, was becoming introverted. So introvert is anthermuk. It was turning within, and it was looking at the soul. And then the intellect was connecting to what Baba was saying, the knowledge that Baba was giving, in order to understand itself. So that's what the divine intellect does. And for the intellect that is divine to work, he says you need love in that intellect. You need to have a loving intellect. And then that intellect would help you with what he calls as divine insight. The soul then begins to see things from the way the intellect works. And this is why when we're looking at our aim and objective, in order to see it the way Baba wants us to see it, to reveal the divinity within me, so the intellect, understanding that knowledge, in order for the soul to see itself in a divine way, he was saying that love is very important. Preet in the buddhi is very important. Because then, in seeing myself as this divine being based on knowledge that Baba has revealed, is where the seeing into being of the Madhya Jibhav will become a reality. If I don't see, if the intellect does not connect to gyan, pure gyan, nij gyan, original gyan, then I am not going to be able to see myself the way Baba wants me to see myself. And so this is why the first subject that we have is gyan. And gyan is the way to see yourself. It is a deeper understanding of myself. It's a deeper understanding of myself in relation to me, to who I am originally, and to see myself. It's not just to believe. You know, I love believe. I love to believe things. I don't have a problem with believing. But more than just believing, I have to experience it in order to see it. If I don't experience it, I'm never ever going to be able to see it. I may see it in someone else, but then I'm just seeing with these eyes. I'm not seeing it with that divine insight. Because divine insight requires me to see something first within me. For something to be touched within me before I can see it in anything else. And so what we need to activate is our divine intellect and our divine insight in order to see into being this stage that is called Madhya Jibhav, this divinity that is within us. I believe also that the Sakar Murlis does that for us. The Sakar Murli does that for us. And so the more I allow myself to study, because when Baba makes a statement, when he gives us to Murli, he actually explains the concepts to us, but he also explains the methodology to apply it to our lives. And sometimes after the Murli, people would say, well, what did Baba say today? And we would repeat a point we like. But then if we were to say, well, what further did Baba say about that? Did he say how to apply it to your life? I don't remember. And so even though the Murlis are, it's supposed to be oral, Baba has spoken them and now they're, you know, spoken, they're read. It's very important, even if it's one point you like from the Murli, take that point and read the whole Murli to support you seeing that point that Baba has given in relation to seeing yourself. That's our first responsibility of listening to the Murli. It is not just about how many points I remember, but did those points in the Murli make me see myself differently? Make me experience something about me that I could see myself as being different? Otherwise, this Abhyak Murlis are beautiful as well. But the Abhyak Murlis are basically like the revised course of telling you these are the dharana points you need to inculcate. But the Sakar Murlis give you the methodology of how to be Madhya Jibha, of how to see yourself as this divine being and to experience yourself as a divine being. Because remember, seeing into being does not happen if you don't have an experience. The moment you have that experience, you see it. And when you see it, I don't think you could be blinded to it again. I don't think that veil can come over you. You could forget it, but it would always be there as a reminder that in that moment, I saw myself as being different. Now, what I love about seeing, what do I see of myself? What do I want to bring? What do I want to see in myself so I could bring it into my being? So that I can become this whole person that I so want to be because I've chosen a spiritual path. We all choose spiritual paths because we want to return to being whole beings. So what is this whole being I want to return to? What is this whole being that I know I have a potential inside to be? What is the potential I want to see emerge from within me so that I could be of service to others. So that I, you know, service is something has become, let me serve, and then I will change later. Or if I serve, that will help me to change. But I think that you look at Brahma Baba, or you look at when we listen to the examples of the lives of someone like Brahma Baba or Mama, or we look at the lives of the Dadis, what you see, their being is a way of serving. So they don't have to wait for a project to serve. So their spiritual lifeline is not connected to a project. Or it's not connected to a situation, or it's not connected to an opportunity. But their spiritual lifeline is connected to their being. So their being is a way of serving. And I think that is the aim and objective, ultimately, that we would like in our lives, to be these whole beings that the being is self-served, just your presence. You know, there was, again, the call of the time, there was this guy from Holland. And he said that what he likes about the Brahma Kumaris are a few things. One is that when he had his whole group of people from his company, and it was Unilever Asia, come together for a session with Daddy Janki. And they were all a little bit skeptical, and they were like this when they came into the auditorium waiting for her. And they all had different body language expressions of what they were thinking. And Daddy Janki walked into the room, and as she walked in, he saw how they all started straightening up, and they all became very alert. So what they were seeing and what her being was manifesting to them was something that corrected their body language, because it was touching something inside of their souls that completely changed that body language. So he was saying that the Brahma Kumaris, the impact of their presence without opening their mouth to say a word, does the work. They don't have to convince with words. Just walking in their beings, people see that and everything changes. The second thing he says, what he likes about the Brahma Kumaris, is that they are able to build spiritual capacity. And they're able to build that spiritual capacity because they reconnect the soul to what I'm describing to you now as those divine sanskaras. And the soul's commitment to sustain those divine sanskaras in an ongoing way is what helps build spiritual capacity. And the third, he says the Brahma Kumaris, even though for publicity purposes and to make it easy for people to understand what they do, they call their practice meditation. But the Brahma Kumaris don't teach meditation. What they teach is to remember. And what you are remembering is something you have forgotten. It's not anything new, but it's simply something you have forgotten. So it becomes easy. So when we are looking, if someone else has described us in this beautiful way, then are we aware that this is what is happening to us? This is what Baba wants us to see in our beautiful beings when he puts this image of Madhya Jibhav in front of us. Now I will just finish off with how I see Madhya Jibhav in my life. And I actually see it as an art of balancing. The art of balancing. And, you know, when you look at this image, what does it remind you of? What do you remember about yourself when you look at that image? And it could, for everyone here, and maybe this is an exercise you do from 7 to 7:30, just keep that image of Vishnu in front of you and just allow yourself to remember what is this image reminding you of in yourself. But just to give some examples of when I look at that image, what it reminds me of is not the status I will get in the golden age. How many of you make efforts because you want to be a king in the golden age? Because you want to be part of the royal family in the golden age? Because you want a position in the golden age? I don't think anyone, very few. Because right now the confluence age, even looking at the image of Vishnu, you're looking at it with a high level of humility. Even accomplishing your aim and objective, it is a great degree of humility. You cannot see into being your divinity with arrogance, with ego, you know, with control. You won't see it. You won't even know what it looks like. But you could definitely see it. There's a natural humility that occurs in that seeing toward yourself. Because to me, this Madhyajibhav thing, Manmanabhav is about the mind, but Madhyajibhav is all about the self returning to its sovereignty. And so how do I see my sovereignty? How do I see that mastery, that self-mastery? It's not about over others or about, you know, wanting my name to be the best name, name, fame, and all of that. But it's about understanding and about returning and about remembering. And so when you look at the Vishnu with humility, you see the double crown, right? In Madhyajibhav. That's the first thing you see, the double crown. And Baba says, it's your light and might. And light and might, actually, it's the balance of your purity and your authority. So what is purity? And I'm going to leave you with questions, because I only have like a few minutes. What is the purity Bab is talking about in the double crown of Madhyajibhav, and what is the authority? What is the light, the purity? What is the might, the authority? Where does it come from? The second balance is the love and law. In our lives, there comes a time in which we no longer want discipline. We want love, but love is the law. But we don't want to be disciplined. We don't want to be within the parameters of anything. We want to be free. Freedom is a very beautiful virtue. Right? We don't want to transform within the context of an organization, is the complaint. Baba created a yajna, he didn't create an organization. So we don't want, we think the organization stops us from transforming. And I think this is one of the biggest hurdles into seeing into being. Because the complaint is, I can't see my being within the context of anything that limits me. But the world is an organization. The world is an institution. Every day of my life, I have to follow some worldly law or the other. But when it comes to Baba's discipline, even set within the integrity of an organization, I don't want to be placed in that position. And so, because the complaint is, I limit myself. And so this balance of Vishnu, the question is, how do I follow the law and at the same time experience the love without projecting and blaming an external structure? Right? So it's a very beautiful question. How do I see into being my freedom within the context of the love and law? And of course, the final one is the lifestyle that I'm called upon to live, the balance of the sound and the silence. And how am I able to do that? How am I able to see my being within the context of silence? And how do I come into sound out of that silence? And what does that sound like to the world? I'll just end with one thing that I think Madhya Jibhav is ultimately the seeing into being. There was a group of VIPs that met Daddy Janki in New York. And Daddy Janki asked the group, how could the Brahma Kumaris be of service to you? And they said, each one went around and told her, but the essence of what they said is, Daddy, we don't want to be invited to meet other VIPs. We do that all the time in our lives. We meet them every day. We also don't want to be invited for you to intellectualize anything to us. Because that's what we do. But what we would like to be invited to experience is the Brahma Kumaris methodology for transformation. The Brahma Kumaris methodology for self-transformation. And how that transformation, when it occurs at an individual level, could have an impact on the collective. That's what we want to experience. And that's what Madhya Jibhav is. It's the methodology of transformation from a human being to a divine being. And we have to use our divine intellect. We have to take it away from the construct of the material paradigm and put it within the spiritual awareness and the spirit, the intellect, how can it work spiritually? And we have to use our divine intellect to do that, and then our divine insight to see ourselves and to bring about what is already there, our true selves, our authentic selves, our divine selves, and manifest that, and then to sustain that for the rest of the confluence age. Om Shanti.